Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the bright stars and planets that you'll see overhead during September. Ask an astronomer about this month's astronomical significance, and the answer you'll most likely get is the autumnal equinox. It marks the celestial end of summer and the beginning of autumn in the Northern Hemisphere. This year, September's equinox takes place on the 22nd at 9:54 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At that moment, the sun shines directly overhead at noon as seen from the equator. Days and nights are both 12 hours long. That's where the word equinox comes from. And no matter where you live, the sun rises due east and sets due west. There's another celestial event associated with this equinox, and that's the harvest moon. Traditionally, it's the name assigned to the full moon that falls closest to the autumnal equinox, and this year it falls on the night of September 24th. The harvest moon gets this name from a geometric oddity. Because the lunar orbit makes a shallow angle with respect to the eastern evening horizon at this time of year, the moon rises only about 30 minutes later on successive nights, not the usual 50 minutes or so. So it never really gets dark between sunset and moonrise for several successive evenings, and that's a boon to farmers working late to try to harvest their crops at day's end. As the month begins, the nearly last quarter moon doesn't rise until about midnight, so that leaves the evening sky moon-free and dark. First on your viewing list is Venus, but despite this planet's brilliance, you'll struggle to spot it. At sunset, it's only 15 degrees above the western horizon, and that shrinks to just 7 degrees by month's end. That's a pity, because in a telescope, the planet shows a nicely proportioned crescent. These will be the last few weeks to see Venus before it dives deeply into the solar glare, and then, come October, it reemerges rather abruptly in the eastern sky before dawn. Look to the right along the western horizon, and you'll see a bright star well up in the sky. That's Arcturus. Right now, the sun sets almost directly below it. Once Venus sets, you'll still have three other bright planets to entertain you once the sky gets dark. Most obvious, but lacking some of its luster from months past, is Jupiter, parked over the southwestern horizon. It, too, is nearing the end of a nice evening showing, setting around 10 p.m. early in September, but closer to 8 p.m. by month's end. Let your gaze drift to the left of Jupiter by a little more than twice the width of your outstretched fist, and you'll cross paths with the red supergiant star Antares, marking the heart of the constellation Scorpius. Shift your gaze to the upper left of Antares by another couple of fists to find Saturn. It's not nearly as bright as Jupiter, but there aren't any especially bright stars nearby, so you should be able to pick it out without much trouble. Note the color contrast between creamy white Saturn and the peachy hue of Antares. If you have a clear view toward south, look to the lower left of Saturn for the teapot-shaped stars of Sagittarius. Three more fists to the left brings you to Mars, which is quite a bit fainter than it was at its peak at the end of July. But it's still dramatically bright. Mars is tucked in the far lower right corner of the constellation Capricornus, which is supposed to represent a quirky creature with the head of a goat and the tail of a fish. Look about one fist above Mars for a stacked pair of stars that are on the dim side of medium bright. Traditionally, these mark the sea goat's head, but I find it easier to make out Capricornus if I imagine those two stars as the right-hand bow of a round-bottomed ship, kind of like Noah's Ark, with the other bow about two fists over to the left. Now lift your gaze way up to find a bright star that's almost directly overhead. That's Vega. It's relatively close as stars go, just 25 light-years away. When the gleam you're seeing right now left Vega, it was 1993, and Bill Clinton was in the first year of his presidency. My, how time flies. Since Vega is right overhead at nightfall, let's use it to find a couple of compact nearby patterns. The first of these is about 1.5 fists to Vega's north. It's a compact trapezoid, with two modestly bright stars and two faint ones, about 3 outstretched fingers across. This is the head of Draco, the dragon, and its long line of stars snake from this head to form a curving line between the Big and Little Dippers. The second grouping is to the west of Vega. its quartet of stars form a trapezoid that's bigger than Draco's, roughly the size of your fist, but a little dimmer. This is known as the keystone of the constellation Hercules, a great hero in Roman mythology, whose muscular torso and legs are represented by stars splaying out from the corners. Look beyond the keystone, toward west, a little more than one fist, to spot a lovely semicircle of stars called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. These three patterns might not be obvious if you have a lot of light pollution, but here's one that'll be unmistakable. Start at Vega and slide your gaze by about 2.5 fists eastward in the direction opposite Arcturus to a prominent star. That's Deneb. It's roughly 100 times farther away than Vega. Astronomers aren't sure of its exact distance, but it's still quite the sparkler, isn't it? That's because Deneb is a real powerhouse of a star, pumping out at least 100,000 times more light than our sun does. Now look for a third bright star, Altair, about 3 fists to the south of Vega and 4 from Deneb. Week by week, this trio of easy-to-spot stars, collectively known as the Summer Triangle, is gradually migrating westward in the sky. If you're lucky enough to live in a really dark location, far from city lights, you'll have no trouble seeing a delicately glowing river of light that we call the Milky Way, vaulting high across the sky. That's the combined light of countless stars in our galaxy's midsection. As it turns out, some of its richest concentrations of stars are in the vicinity of Deneb. Can you see a faint glow up there? If you're not sure, try again closer to midnight, when many lights have been shut off and Deneb itself is almost overhead. If you still can't see the star cloud, you can blame light pollution, which sadly has robbed most of us of our chance to see the Milky Way at all. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, we'll explore Cassiopeia and find out why she's so vain. Until then, I wish you clear skies.